Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Welcome to NBA Today, presented by American Express.
You know, I just love playing the game. I just want to be on the floor as much as possible. I want to play as much as possible.
And that's 50 for Joel Embiid.
The Magic dominated in every category.
But we know we got to do the same thing on Saturday.
Here's LeBron in a breakaway. Slam dunk!
Every time we get down, we don't panic. We stay the course and we find a way to get back in the game.
Denver wins game number three. A decisive 3-0 lead.
Welcome to NBA Today, presented by American Express. I'm your girl, Chinee Ogwumike, filling in for the one and only Malika Andrews. And I'm joined here in Los Angeles studio by former front office executive Scott Perry and beaming in somewhere in Ohio, our senior writer, Brian Windhorst. And y'all, we have so much to get into after last night's action. Let's start, though, where things ended, because this was supposed to say Lake Show, but things changed quickly. Nuggets versus the Lakers in game three. Lakers have lost 6 straight playoff games, all to the Nuggets. One loss from tying the franchise's record longest playoff losing streak. But early in the first quarter, Wendy, a little showtime from Los Angeles.
Yeah, this is what you'd expect from the Lakers coming out at home. Lots of energy from LeBron, lots of energy from AD. They were a great home team this year. You knew they were going to come out and fight for their lives in this series.
Yeah, LeBron, 8 points, 4 for 4 field goals in the first quarter as Los Angeles took an early lead. And then Anthony Davis, really aggressive, getting to the rim. Now, okay, the Nuggets start showing up. They push it in transition.
Look at the score, though.
I know, exactly. And watch this right here. Aaron Gordon, he was Mr. Do-It-All. Scott.
Aaron Gordon was awesome, Shanae. He playoff career high in points and rebounds. He set the tone with his energy and athleticism all night long.
He truly did. Now in the third quarter, Nuggets down again. But watch, tough finish. He plays in the dunker position, and I don't think anyone plays better from that spot on the floor than AG. Later, again, turnover, dime. Just a tough finish from Jamal Murray.
Jamal Murray, steady as they come.
And steady, you know, Eddie.
Yes, and he raises his game come playoff time. We know that.
Yep. And then, I mean, this was a tough foul, a little bit of a frustration foul from LeBron James, especially given the circumstances. Now we head to the fourth quarter. Nuggets in the lead, and Porter Jr. knocks down the jumper. The Nuggets extend the lead to 12, and the Nuggets would win 112-105. And this was just a little bit of insult to injury. Jokic had 24, 15, and 9. Nuggets win. Here's LeBron after the game.
We know what it takes to win. We know what it takes to win a championship and how, you know, damn near perfect you got to be. That's not like something that's so crazy to obtain. I've been a part of it 4 times where you have to have almost perfect basketball to win, you know, and I've done it with him. So I'm not a guy that you should ask that, because I don't feel a way about anybody that don't want to strive to be as close to perfect as possible. And it's just basketball. At the end of the day, it's just basketball.
So glad to have Brian Windhorst here today, because Brian, you read the tea leaves better than anyone when it comes to LeBron James. What's your reaction to his comments after he's now one loss away from getting swept by the Nuggets?
Yeah, he's getting raked over the coals a little bit for this comment, but you have to give the context of what the question. He was asked, what the question was, does he think some of his teammates are pressing because he knows that they all know they have to play perfect to beat the Nuggets? And he was basically saying, that's basketball. Basketball is the way you play that. I really don't think you should take that comment and blow it out of proportion. What I do think you should understand is that LeBron is 15-1 in his career in the first round. Not overall record, 15-1 in series. Chiney, he once went through a stretch of 5 years where he didn't lose a first round game. 21 straight first round games he won. And the reason I'm bringing that up is he knows what it's like to be on the other side, where he's the best player and he has the better team, and he just wrestles the other opponent that is inferior to the ground. That is what is happening here. He can't say it that cleanly because he would get raked over the coals for it for that too, but I am saying it for him. They are not good enough. He knows they are not good enough, and it's now just a matter of time, as it was for him for a decade plus on the other side of this.
Yeah, so Wendy, you're basically saying the tables have turned in the harshest ways for LeBron James, and you also know that saying, yep. The luck of the draw. Well, this matchup was the opposite of that for the Los Angeles Lakers because the Nuggets are that good. Let me talk nerdy to you for a second. Denver is the fourth team to win the first three games of a series after trailing at halftime. This is even more impressive when you realize that the Nuggets have trailed by double digits in all of those three games. So, Scott, why can't a LeBron-led Lakers team figure it out, really, in the second half of these games?
To put it simply, Shanae, they're just going up against a better team. This Denver Nuggets team is just absolutely better. And let's just break down the starting lineups. Okay, you got LeBron and AD, two All-Stars. You've got, obviously, Nikola Jokic and
Jamal Murray,
and two All-Stars. But the other three starters, huge advantage for the for the Nuggets, for sure. Because look, Aaron Gordon, we just talked about him, super athlete, near All-Star last year. KCP, great two-way player. Michael Porter could be averaging 20 points on any team in the league. And they're overmatched. D'Lo and Austin Reeves, those guys are overmatched in this series. And so they're running against a championship caliber team that knows how to win. Even when the Lakers get off to these fast starts, they understand how to not drop the rope, continue to execute, push through, and get to the finish line.
Yeah, and they were fortunate last year in their draw. They got a team in Golden State that was smaller that they could be bigger than, and then they played, they played Memphis, and Memphis, John Morant was dinged up, and Steven Adams was dinged up. They had some advantages last year they didn't have this year. Just because they're going to go out in the first round of this year's playoffs doesn't mean that they're demonstrably worse than they were last year. It just means that they played the Nuggets in the first round. And the biggest number that I can give, we played that sound from Michael Malone, who goes, "We don't panic when we get behind." In the seven games in the playoffs that the Lakers and Nuggets have played over the last 2 years, the Lakers have won the first half by 21 points. They've won almost every first half. The Nuggets have won the second halves by 62. And I'm telling you, maybe those numbers don't exactly equal, but I'll bet if you go back to LeBron James teams in 2013, 14, 15, 16, those were happening in those series too. Because the better team, and in this case also usually the bigger team, bigger, taller, and better, tends to win out as the game goes along. And I'm sure if you're a Laker fan, you feel like you've seen the same game over and over because that's what it really has been.
Yeah, the hard thing about all of this is that the Lakers, they came into this series playing really great basketball. They just ran into a juggernaut, and that is also led by Nikola Jokic. So he's winning the battle of the big men on the West Coast. How about the battle of the big men on the East Coast? Because Joel Embiid, I mean, my goodness, the effort that we have seen. We've gone 8 minutes, and we haven't talked about the reigning MVP's 50-piece wing dinner in Philly last night. So let's roll the highlight. MVP right there. Joel Embiid, though, the start of the game, it was a little physical, and I know a lot of people are talking about moments like this. Joel Embiid is called for the offensive foul on the swim move right there, just making multiple points of contact that he mobilized Isaiah Hartenstein. And then, again, watch this right here. Embiid grabs a leg, and then, it just was a tough situation to jurisdict. But here's Tom Thibodeau after the game on this.
Which one? The one they called or the one they didn't call? Okay. Oh, okay. All right. I just want to make sure we have clarity on that.
Wendy, your thoughts on the physicality in this play right here from Joel?
Well, Joel Embiid is lucky that he was not ejected from this game, not just for that play, but he could have been called for a second flagrant on two different plays. He hit Hartenstein, and then also he did a sort of a Draymond scissor kick to Mitch Robinson later in the first half. He was sort of a little bit out of control. And if you want my honest assessment, it was a huge advantage that he was still in this game at the end of this first half.
That is true, even though the New York Knicks continued to fight back. But then Joel Embiid had himself a second half, particularly the third quarter, where he went 4-for-4 from the third, which is the most in any quarter of his career. And then halfway through the fourth, we see it continue. He did it from three levels. But particularly, he realized that, hey, if this game is going to be physical and I'm getting called for it, I'm going to stay on the perimeter and I'm going to shoot and watch him knock down this jumper over Jalen Brunson. So far we have seen, I mean, we saw a game two that was interesting. We saw a game three that also was interesting. Overall, the Sixers win the game. And here is Joel Embiid after dropping 58-4 after the game.
It's just meant to be. Just gotta take it as it is. But the one thing I'm not gonna do is give up. No matter what happens, gotta keep pushing, gotta keep fighting, gotta keep putting my body on the line for my family, for this city, for this team. I can't sit back and be like, you know, every single time I feel bad about myself.
Joel Embiid had the best game of his playoff career and dropped a 50-piece special, all flats. That's for you, Perk, versus the Knicks. I'm sorry, it's your Knicks as well. He is just the third player to score 50 against the Knicks in a playoff game. The others are all Hall of Famers, Sam Jones and his heirness, Michael Jordan. So, Brian, Embiid seems to be successfully fighting off all of those playoff demons of the past so far in this series. What are your takeaways from the game?
Two things I want to say. One, he had the greatest playoff game of his career while dealing, as he revealed after the game, with Bell's palsy, which is paralyzing the left side of his face. He can't blink his left eye. He said that sometimes his left eye goes blurry. And Bell's palsy is usually caused by, it's usually a result of an underlying condition. I don't know what he's dealing with on a day-to-day basis, much less the knee. And he drops an absolute enormous game in a must-win situation that was huge. So I have to acknowledge that this is one of the great performances we've seen in the playoffs in years when you consider all that. So he needs to be applauded for that. The second thing is, the New York Knicks can withdraw, or the Philadelphia 76ers can withdraw their grievance or whatever they were pretending they were going to do after game two, because whatever you think that you were wronged by in that last two-minute report and you know, whatever, you know, you think is unfair, Joel Embiid was fortunate to not get ejected from this game. Again, I wouldn't even be surprised if the NBA, you know, retroactively upgrades one of those fouls to a flagrant. And if he had gotten a second flagrant one, he would have been ejected. So the fact that Joel Embiid was able to stay in this game, in my view, maybe not in the 76ers fans' view, but in my view, squares us when it comes to officiating in this series. I don't want to hear about game two again. We're square. It's 2-1 Knicks, and let's move forward.
Look, you kind of are giving the Knicks fans more to be mad about, but when we think about the basketball gods, yes, let's just move forward. This is an instant classic already of a series. So, Scott, you know the Knicks better than anyone. Do you think that the momentum has really shifted in the series after what we saw in Game 3?
I think it's slightly shifted towards the Sixers. Now, look, you don't get down in a series until you lose at home. So it was important that the Sixers get this one. Joel has an epic performance. You know, playing on one leg, I think it's inspiring his team. It gives the Philadelphia team a lot of confidence. And one thing, if you're a Philadelphia fan to take away from this game, Jalen Brunson had his best game by far in this series. And so the Knicks' best player had his best game. The Sixers' best player had his best game. Best on best, Philly won. So you got to be encouraged about that if you're Philadelphia going into game four.
Yeah, I do agree. I mean, this has been fun to watch. I know there's been controversy, but that's like the recipe for success when it comes to the NBA. Now, coming up right here on NBA Today, an update on when we might see Giannis back on the court and why more trouble could lie ahead for the Bucks as they head into Game 3 tonight. Plus, we go to the Apex Series in the West as Luka and Kyrie face Kawhi and Paul George. We will tell you one thing that this series hinges on with some special guests that are here to debate. And if the Lakers get swept, is there a legitimate path for LeBron to ever win a fifth championship with the Lakers? It's NBA Today with your girl Sinead right here.
Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
NBA Today is presented by the powerful backing of American Express.
The Magic were in a must-win situation last night in Orlando, and playoff P, as in playoff Paolo, was on full display. In the best of seven series, Cavs versus Magic, the Cavs are 15-0 all-time with 2-0 lead, and the Magic are 0-6 all-time when facing that type of deficit. But Paolo, I guess we're saying, playoff P, came to play. He had himself a night.
Oh, he was excellent. It's great to see a young player respond after having two rough games on the road to start the series with 15 combined turnovers in Cleveland. He was awesome. Set the tone in the very beginning with his aggression. 31 points on the night. He led this Magic team, gives them confidence going into game four.
And what you just saw right there by the Magic is their bread and butter. They have defense that turns into offense, but when your offense shows up like this, Paolo Banchero, who had 19 points, 18 field goal attempts, he was like, I'm going to shoot my shot in the first half as the Magic led 61-45 at the half. As we go into the third quarter, I mean, Paolo gets back to his spot.
Yeah, Paolo again just was super aggressive all night, and when he has that outside shot working, he is really tough to defend.
Look at that package though. Exactly. Off the dribble.
And he's super strong, isn't he?
Magic go on to win 121-83. Paolo Banchero, 31, 14 rebounds, and guess what? Zero turnovers.
Exactly.
Don't sleep on last year's Rookie of the Year. The Magic get their first home playoff win since 2011, and Paolo Banchero announced himself to the NBA world in a very big way. Paolo became the third youngest player in NBA history with 30 points and 10 rebounds in a playoff game. Now get this, only LeBron and Magic did it at a younger age. So let's stick in the East though here, as the Bucks though, another team in the East, may be without two of their core pieces tonight in game three versus the Pacers. Giannis has missed the last five games due to a calf injury, while Chris Middleton twisted his ankle in game two. So for more on those two key players for the Bucks, I'd like to welcome in our Bucks reporter live from Game 3 in Indiana, Jamal Collier. Hey, Jamal. So we know that Giannis is out tonight for the fifth consecutive game. What more can you tell us about his recovery?
Well, Shanae, the Bucks are still optimistic about just the steps that Giannis has taken in that calf injury, the progress that he's made over these past few weeks. He's been on the court for most of the past week. He has been running, has not been running yet. He's been jogging, he's been shooting, and the key is for him to get running before they're ready for him to go back on the court in a game situation. Doc Rivers mentioned that he has not participated in a full 5-on-5 practice just yet, and he may not have to before he gets back on the court. But for all the improvements they have seen from him, and they're still optimistic that they will see him at some point in this series, they've got to see him running and testing that calf out at full speed before he's ready to play in a game here in this series.
So a little bit more movement for Giannis. How about his running mate, Chris Middleton? What is his status for tonight?
Yeah, well, Middleton, it was a surprise to see that he did not practice on yesterday, because he said it right after game two that he thought that ankle was fine and he was going to be able to bounce back. But going into this game, he's questionable. The Bucks want to see how he warms up tonight before determining his status. But Shanae, in practice yesterday, they were, you know, going through a game plan as if Middleton would not play. I mean, Doc Rivers talked about ways they'd have to necessarily generate offense, whether it be posting up Brooke Lopez more, and just finding ways for Damian Lillard, if he's going to have an even heavier scoring load on him, how can they rest Dame? How can they get – they can't afford to have him not actually on the floor. Can they sort of manipulate the TV timeouts to give him an extra breather if he's got to do more? They did win two games this year that Giannis and Middleton did not play when they just had to rely on Dame. But going into this game three, they, as Doc said, they're in a hold their breath situation because Middleton's status is really up in the air here before he can get on the court and test it a couple hours before game three.
Jamal, I said it yesterday, that movie, Waiting to Exhale, it feels like that's what all the Milwaukee Bucks fans are feeling right now. And I know that's one of your favorite movies as well. I gotta concur, right? Thanks so much, Jamal.
It's a classic.
It is a classic. Exactly. Thank you so much. As you mentioned, this is new territory for the Bucks. They're facing potentially missing both Giannis and Middleton, their 2021 championship duo. That has only happened twice this season. But as Jamal mentioned, Milwaukee was able to win both of those games. So let's get Brian Windhorst and Scott back into this conversation. With Chris Middleton's status in question and Giannis still out, Brian, how much longer can the Bucks survive with all of these injuries?
Yeah, well, they're not going to be able to survive this series if they can't get these production from these two guys. And obviously, tonight's game plan is heavily dependent on Middleton. But I think Doc Rivers' big choices could be at the defensive end. The strategy that they've put in place for these first two games is to really limit Tyrese Halliburton. They've been trapping him, forcing the ball out of his hands. He has just 17 total shots in the first two games, but that has opened the door for Pascal Siakam, who's having one of the most prolific performances in the postseason thus far. 36 points in game one, 37 points in game two. He's getting the ball way too cleanly and easily. And look, they also had their role players shoot well from three-point range in game two. Kind of a choice that you got to make. Stick with your game plan. The guy who beat them four times in regular season was Halliburton. Or do you have to adjust to worry about Pascal Siakam, who's been killing them in games one and two?
Look, I think they need Dame time tonight, for sure. What we've seen throughout his career, he's got to have a huge scoring output tonight. And then you need Bobby Portis as well as Brooke Lopez to up their scoring output tonight as well. Look, they can't. It's going to be tough for them to rely on their defense. The Milwaukee Bucks have been spotty defensively all season long. They're playing a team that's one of the top scoring offensive teams in the league. They're going to have to score with this team enough to keep it close and let Dame do what Dame does and pull it out in the end.
Yeah, I mean, look at the difference between first half and second half for Dame Lillard. It feels like he gives all of his energy in the first. He's got to find a way to muster up some more because they need him now more than ever before. But, y'all, we will actually find out tonight because the NBA playoffs first round rolls on with three more game threes tonight on ESPN and the app. The Pacers host the Bucks, as we just mentioned, at 5:30 Eastern, 4:30 Central. With the series tied at one apiece, it's crucial. Then it's the Clippers-Mavs also tied at one. And we cap the night with the Timberwolves-Suns. With Minnesota up two games to none, the Countdown crew begins our coverage at 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific. Still coming to NBA Today. What did Drake say? I love this, producer Jaren. Dropping Gimme 50. How Embiid silenced all the playoff critics with his best postseason performance of his career. Plus, will Kawhi and the Clippers rebound after their loss to Luka Doncic in game two? Or will Luka continue his prowess tonight at home? And something is happening to LeBron against the Nuggets that never happened to Michael Jordan. Find out what that is next. NBA Today, we'll be right back.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Welcome back to NBA Today, presented by American Express.
What are we calling this? The Golden Game? Because this was the 50th player to score 50 points in NBA playoff history. And it goes to Joel Embiid. And I want to talk nerdy to you. I want to break it down. This is how good Joel Embiid was versus the Knicks in Game 3. It's so rare that you have a post player that you send pin downs for because they're lethal on the perimeter, but also at the paint. This is how he got early good looks at the rim. And there he kisses it off the glass. So he did his damage on the inside to start. Then he started to go to his most unguardable place on the floor through a pick and pop. A lot of attention heading to the rim. They just drop it over to Joel Embiid. That's his favorite place where he knocks down most of his shots from the perimeter. He took some contact, but no foul. Still kept playing. Again, another pick and roll as we keep moving the ball back. Again, the defense is all eyes were on the ball handler. You cannot leave that man open from three because that's where he does his damage, particularly as we saw in the second half. But this is what I love right here. When you force a switch in a pick and roll, this is a rejection of the screen. He will make you pay. It forces Jalen Brunson to step out. Does he even see Jalen Brunson? I don't think so, Scott.
No,
he's able to knock it down again. I believe 10 of his, 18 shots were contested, and he made most of those in the second half. It was wild. Joel Embiid became the first 76ers player with 50 points in a playoff game since Allen Iverson in 2003, and I think he was there watching. The 50 points by Embiid are tied for the fourth most by any player in 76ers playoff history and sets his personal best in the postseason. Tim Bontemps is with us now, and you were in the building last night. It's hard to believe that Joel Embiid has been back from his knee injury for less than a month, and he just put up 50 points in a playoff game. We also, though, found out he's dealing with more than just the meniscus injury. So health-wise, Tim, what can you tell us about what's going on with Joel Embiid?
Well, today you were right. Allen Iverson was in the building for that game through and for the Sixers last night. And as you also mentioned, Joel Embiid is dealing with a whole bunch of stuff. So let's start with the meniscus injury. He's obviously still coming back from that. He's wearing the bulky knee brace on his knee, even though he was moving, I think, much better throughout Game 3 than he was for large stretches of both Game 1 and 2. Obviously left Game 1 in the second quarter, looked hampered in the second half, and then he looked like he triggered something in the third quarter of Game 2 that limited him through the rest of the game. But he looked very good, I think, physically moving around in Game 3, and that's all the more remarkable when he also has been dealing with Bell's palsy, a condition that has impacted the left side of his face for more than a week now. If you go back to the game against the Miami Heat in the play-in tournament, since then, he's been dealing with this condition which causes the left side of your face to not be able to move. So he's got to put eye drops in his eye to keep it from drying out. He joked that he doesn't want to impact his beautiful face and his beautiful smile. It doesn't allow him to quite use his mouth in the way he normally does. And it's obviously been something that has bothered him on the court. I asked if it's impacted his vision, and he said that it's at times made it blurry. This is why both last night speaking to reporters and after Game 2, you saw him looking down at the ground and not at the camera because it's hard for him to sort of look level at people when he's dealing with this. So you've got all this going on with Joel Embiid. And the other thing, Shanae, that I think hasn't been talked about very much is there's been a real mental toll on Joel Embiid, something you talked about last night after Game 3, something he also talked about before coming back from the knee injury. This is a guy who year after year says, all I want to do is be healthy when the playoffs arrive. And every single year of his career, he's either missed the whole season with an injury, missed the end of the season with an injury, or has been dealing with an injury in the postseason, as we just laid out. He's dealing with multiple injuries right now. So despite all that, Joel Embiid had 50 points last night, got the Sixers back in the series, backed up his declaration that the Sixers are going to win the series after Game 2, and as always, is the most interesting man in the NBA because every game, no matter what's happening, there's something happening with Joel Embiid.
Tim, it is truly remarkable given all that he has gone up against and all those challenges. He's also played his way into shape during the playoffs. He has increased his scoring in every game of the series, and that culminated with a new playoff career high last night. This was hands down the best postseason performance of his career. But Brian, can we say that Joel Embiid truly unleashed something last night?
I think so. I think all things considered, it was remarkable. I think it's frankly going to be hard for him to replicate it. The Sixers are going to need to get more balanced production from across their team because, frankly, the Knicks are probably pretty pleased with what they got from Jalen Brunson. Scott mentioned that earlier. It was glossed over because Embiid was so breathtaking, but he had 39 points and 13 assists last night. So they needed every single one of these 50 points, and they really never had great separation. They were behind at halftime. So it's an incredible load that they're asking from Joel, and it's remarkable that he's been able to carry it and continue to get better every game in this series.
Wendy, you're so right. I've learned so much about Joel Embiid in this series. Look, we all know he's a generational talent, one of the best ever at the center position in terms of skill and talent. But I'm learning about what's inside of his heart and his head. This guy is competitive. He's got great passion for basketball. He's playing on one leg through multiple medical conditions. You got to marvel at what he's doing. And I think he's really empowering his teammates too, because they're watching him do that. So I got to believe that they're going to come out in this next game and try to rally behind him, knowing that he can't keep putting up 50-point performances and they try to get wins all the time.
Well, let's stick on the numbers, though, Scott, because Joel Embiid's 50 in Game 3 was a blend of efficiency and also just straight-up dominance, because he's the fifth player in NBA postseason history to have a game with 50 points, at least 5 threes, and make 65% of their shots. All of the previous four players were guards, making Embiid's offensive versatility truly pop. Now, Wendy, overall, when you look at this matchup, it's been truly emotional. I mean, Game 2, the way that the Knicks won, now there's some controversy. Game 3 with Joel Embiid maybe not being ejected. Where do you think the series overall stands?
I think the Knicks probably feel okay about where they're at. Game 2 was a 50-50 game that they stole, maybe even 51-49 in favor of the Sixers. They hung in this game despite Embiid throwing haymakers like that. And the Sixers kind of had confidence in the defensive strategy they were employing on Brunson, using a bunch of size with him, using Nico Batum and also Kelly Oubre on him. And he was able to break out of that. So I think the Knicks probably will take some confidence, especially because of the way Brunson played into Sunday's Game 4.
The Sixers just need to get better performance. They need to get better performances out of their supporting cast. Someone's got to rise up. You know, Kelly Oubre had 15 the last game, but Tobias Harris, Buddy Hield off the bench, they're going to need someone else to provide scoring other than just Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid if they want to win Game 4.
Let's dive a little bit in further, because Joel Embiid had the best game of his playoff career, dropped 50-piece special all flats on the Knicks. And again, he's just the third player to score 50 against the Knicks in a playoff game. As I mentioned before, the other two are Hall of Famers. For a deeper look at the reaction to the Sixers' success in Game 3, it's time for our special series, Home Court Advantage, where we go to our boots on the ground reporters based in NBA playoff cities. So we're going to welcome in Deuces Rogers from WPVI in Philadelphia. And Deuces, beyond nailing those jumpers in the third quarter, we saw extraordinary physicality from Joel Embiid. How is Philly reacting to this type of play from their star player?
It's funny you should mention that. On the drive in today, I'm listening to talk radio, and both the fans and the radio hosts, they said had Embiid been hit with a flagrant 2, they would have crushed him today. That was that fine line. Yes, he was a little more physical there in Game 3. And with Joel, it's all about availability. Not about ability, about availability. And had he not been able to complete that game yesterday, they would have crushed him. So, again, fine line, but stayed in the game, got the 50-50 burger, so that was good for the Sixers.
It was good. So the Sixers fans, they were clearly outraged by the officiating in Game 2. And now Knicks fans have their own gripe of their own with the officiating after Game 3. So with a little luck and also Joel Embiid's 50-piece on their side, is faith truly restored in Philadelphia? Did the universe balance everything out?
Kind of. So, again, the fans are pointing at Tom Thibodeau for complaining about the officiating, which we find kind of rich here in this town. The Knicks are a physical team. The Sixers were outbodied, especially in that Game 1. The Sixers realized, listen, we played really well in Game 2. We are a couple of questionable calls away, maybe a rebound away from winning that game. The Knicks, they won their home games. The Sixers won their home game in Game 3. So the Sixers, they're pretty confident that they did what they were supposed to do, and they can do the same thing in a Game 4 coming up on Sunday.
Oh, yeah, we will have all of our popcorn ready. Thank you so much for joining us, Deuces, here on NBA Today.
Thank you, Shanae.
Joel Embiid isn't the only top performer this playoffs. Let's head to the West with some special guests. Luka always brings buckets, but is defense going to be a permanent tool in his bag? A certain podcast is taking over to discuss after the break.
Welcome back to NBA Today, presented by American Express.
Welcome back to NBA Today. Chinee Ogwumike here with Brian Windhorst and Tim Bontemps. And I just realized we're one person short of the Hoop Collective pod. Hey! Tim McMahon, everyone's here. So let's officially do a Hoop Collective takeover of NBA Today. Take it away, Brian.
Hey, thanks, Chinee. Thanks for hosting the Hoop Collective here on NBA Today, where we'll talk about the NBA. The last couple of days, Bontemps, heavy criticism of Darvin Ham as he has now overseen seven consecutive playoff losses to the Denver Nuggets. They're ripping his lineups. They say he's too small. They're ripping his second half adjustments. They're ripping the fact that he's not using enough timeouts. They're ripping the fact that he's not using enough challenges, although he did use a challenge late in the fourth quarter last night that was successful. There's a lot of heat on Darvin Ham. I don't know if he's going to survive this if they get swept a second time, but you don't necessarily believe that all of the angst should be pointed at the head coach of the Lakers.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to sit here, Brian, and try to say Darvin Ham has done a perfect job, but let's look at what, to me, the real problem with the Lakers is, which is their roster isn't good enough, which is why they've lost 11 times in a row to the Denver Nuggets. And let's look at a series of decisions that Rob Pelinka has made over the past few years. Rob Pelinka was the one who traded Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who's beating them now with the Denver Nuggets, for Russell Westbrook. Rob Pelinka was the guy who chose D'Angelo Russell over Mike Conley in the second Russell Westbrook trade. Rob Pelinka was the guy who chose Talen Horton-Tucker over Alex Caruso and also just decided not to pay Alex Caruso what was an undermarket value contract at the time and has only grown in that regard over the past few years with the Chicago Bulls. Rob Pelinka is the person who drafted Jalen Hood-Schifino over Jaime Jaquez, Brandon Pajemski, and Cam Whitmore, the next three picks in the draft, all of whom would have been excellent two-way additions for the Lakers this year. He's also the guy who signed Gabe Vincent last summer, who basically didn't play this year with a knee injury, and he's the guy who turned down options for Malik Beasley and Mo Bamba that could have been a large expiring contract for the Lakers to make a move this summer to add to their team, and it's or this season, I should say, and then they didn't have it to improve this roster, which clearly wasn't good enough over the course of the year. So, yes, I'm not saying Darvin Ham's perfect. I'm not saying he's the second coming of Red Auerbach, but when you look at what's going on with the Lakers, this team is not good enough. They have two-way players in Anthony Davis and LeBron James, and those guys combined to play 147 games this season. The fact that this team is in the play-in mix because of that means the rest of this team around them is simply not good enough to be where the Lakers expect to be, which is contending for Western Conference titles and championships.
McMahon?
Well, listen, man. Everybody wants to talk about LeBron James. I get it. We only have one game left to talk about King James in the playoffs. He's in the conversation for greatest of all time. He's not in the conversation for greatest of right now. At some point, I guess we got three rounds left to talk about the greatest of right now. We have three rounds left to talk about Nikola Jokic, because the story of this series is not LeBron James. It's not the Lakers. It's the defending champion Nuggets and the fact that Jokic is so by far the best player in this series. It's not even funny. Just like that was the case last year in the so-called most competitive sweep of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that was a negative resume for Pelinka that Bontemps just went through there. And I don't know if I could recover from that if I was a Laker fan, because quite frankly, that's was quite the indictment. Okay, the series that you're at, McMahon, is going to be, I think, one of the most important and high intensity of the first round. You're back in Dallas tonight for Game 3 after the Mavericks were victorious in that terrific Game 2 performance. And you said something on the Hoop Collective the other day that ran in today's edition, which is you thought that Game 2 was the best defensive performance of Luka Doncic's career. Is this something that is a one-off? Can he keep this up? And can the Mavs win this series playing defense?
This is something that he's been building up to. He's been a drastically improved defensive player all season long. There's plenty of metrics that point to that. One of those, team defense, the Mavericks for the last 20 games of the season were the number one defense in the NBA. So, no, I don't think this is a fluke. What I do think is it's an endurance test for Luka Doncic. Ty Lue referred to Jason Kidd as Jason Thibodeau because Luka played 46 minutes. He rested one time in the second half. He subbed out for one free throw. They called a timeout, and he subbed right back in. The Clippers, I think, will continue attacking him, but it didn't work last game. 2 of 17 with Luka as the primary defender. They're attacking him to try to make him work as hard as possible. Not only did he shut them down defensively, he had enough gas left in the tank to hit that step-back dagger. And Ty Lue said he felt like they were so focused on going at Luka that their offense got stagnant. So, again, I think they'll tweak it, but they're still going to hunt him because they have to wear him down to have a chance to win this series.
Well, McMahon, you're totally right about Luka's defense. He was fantastic in Game 2. And if you look forward in this series, this is a huge 5 games upcoming for Dallas. They traded for P.J. Washington, traded for Daniel Gafford, gave up a lot of future draft capital at the trade deadline to be a contender right now. They got to win this series to show they have the ability to be a contender right now. So let's see what happens tonight. Let's see what happens over the 4 games to follow.
It's going to be a very exciting series, I think. Chinay, the Hoop Collective is very, very proud to have been a little part of the show today.
Thank you for allowing me to be load managed here on NBA Today. It was very fun, Hoop Collective. But now, would you all be down to make some picks with me? Because it's now time for Setting the Pick, brought to you by ESPN Bet, the official sports book of ESPN. And we've got 3 Game 3s tonight. The T-Wolves started off. They have a 2-0 lead on the Suns. Game 3 is in Phoenix. So, Brian, who you got tonight?
I mean, I'm saying the Suns just to satisfy this segment, but I don't know how you can trust the Suns the way that they have played all year. Good luck to you if you're a Phoenix fan. Get your, you know, your Pepto-Bismol. I have no idea what's going to happen in this game tonight, but the Suns are home.
Not the Pepto-Bismol. It was a headache, nausea, introduction, upset. Okay, yeah. Clippers at Mavs in Dallas. Series is tied at 1-1. Tim McMahon, who you got?
I picked Mavs in 6 for the series, so makes sense that I would pick the Mavericks tonight. Again, it's about defense. It's about the stars. It's about the role players playing better at home. I think for the Clippers to have a chance to pull off this series, they're going to need Pete Kawhi. I think it's not reasonable to expect that just in the second game back.
And also your safety as you're standing in the arena. Now, Bucks at Pacers in Indy. Series is tied. Tim Bontemps, who you got in this one?
I got the Pacers, Chiney. We don't know what Chris Middleton's status is. He's questionable with an ankle sprain from the last game. Giannis not playing again. We saw the Pacers figure a bunch of stuff out in Game 2, and I think Tyrese Haliburton will play much better as he comes back to Indiana for Game 3.
Kudos to the guys. That takeover was fun. Glad to be a part of the first and likely not the last takeover here on NBA Today. Adios, amigos. That's what you always say. Who are you picking, though? Download the ESPN Bet app to get started. New customers receive $100 in bonus bets once they place their first sportsbook bet with ESPN Bet. Plenty of picks to go around these days in the sports world. The NFL draft coverage continues tonight on ESPN2, ABC, and the NFL Network at 7 Eastern with the second and third rounds. You can always watch it on ESPN Deportes as well, the ESPN app, and listen to it on ESPN Radio from anywhere. All right, so if the Lakers get swept, this won't be a first for LeBron. What will it mean this time around for his chances at 5th title in Los Angeles?
I need a bucket.
Bucket? I'm a walking bucket.
Kelsey Plum.
I got clutch buckets.
No.
I got deep buckets.
No.
Easy buckets.
Girl.
I got it. You want a floater?
Splash. Splash. I need a bucket.
Oh, you don't need me. You need like a good neighbor. State Farm is there.
Ooh, State Farm can help with this. Just file a claim on the app or give us a call.
I get buckets and assists.
The NBA on ESPN, presented by State Farm.
Today is presented by the powerful backing of American Express.
LA trying to stay in this 3-on-0. It's James!
Clearly, these Lakers are ready to play. Setting the tone early. Great defense.
It's Gordon again, reverse style.
You said it best. It's been a collective effort this third quarter from Denver. Everybody contributing.
It's been so much energy in the first half, building lead, defensive intensity that we have that we come out in the third quarter with not much energy and kind of lose track of the attention to detail that we had in the first half.
The Nuggets are rolling. They take a 3-0 lead in the series. The Lakers' season might be on life support.
Ooh, life support. LeBron is an all-time great, but it is true. He has been swept out of the playoffs in the past. First, in 2007, despite making the finals, the Spurs won their fourth title by sweeping the upstart Cavs. Then in 2018, also in the finals, this time the Cavaliers were swept by the Warriors. It was LeBron's final game as a member of the Cavs during his second stint with the franchise. And in the Western Conference Finals just last year, this same Nuggets squad ended the Lakers season at Crypto.com Arena. Denver went on to win the title last season. Now, we've never seen a team win a playoff series when trailing 3-0. Each of the previous 151 teams tried and failed to win 4 consecutive games to turn the tide. Only 4 of those 151 teams were even able to force a game 7, which they all lost. Now, LeBron said it after the loss. It's just basketball. But I want to take a moment to bring up this tweet by Kendrick Perkins because it had us thinking. If you look at this tweet, he called to question this. Unless Jokic has an early retirement, LeBron will never win another title. Now, I know Perk is not on the show. He always likes to drop some dimes for us. But, Brian, when you look at the state of the Los Angeles Lakers and where LeBron is currently in his career, do you think there's still hope for him in L.A. to win a 5th title?
You know, they have one more big move that they can make. They have 3 first-round picks and basically Austin Reeves that they'll be able to trade in June. It's possible that they could attract a big-time star player and pair him with LeBron and AD and get close to the Nuggets. Would I favor that to happen? I would not favor it to happen, especially when you look how young OKC is. But they're not done. The idea that this is the Lakers' last stand I don't think is a fair analysis, especially since they do have those assets to play with over the summer.
Just to add to what Wendy's saying, look, LeBron is going to need a little more help. We know that. He can't play Superman any longer. But I think they need to add a very high-level two-way player, and then and additionally, they need to find a guy who can be that reliable third scorer. They have to have that to be able to compete and even have a chance to play against the likes of the Denver Nuggets and the OKC Thunder moving forward.
Wendy, really quickly, do you think the Lakers can do that in the offseason?
I think that there'll be players who will want to play in L.A. Whether or not in the current CBA you want to live in a world with 3-star players is a different question.
It is a different question, but still, there's one game left. So you're telling us that there's still a chance for LeBron James to reverse the course of history. Thanks for hanging us with here.